Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to tell you that after being a journalist and a news presenter for four of the biggest television networks in the United States, I think it's time for some context and for some truth-telling. And in that vein, here's what we're going to be talking about today. Number one, the most important election day that determines who will be the nominees for president of the United States is done. Surprises? Not really. Number two, China makes a major announcement about its economy and its military. Surprises? Yes, really. Number three, why is Donald Trump meeting with Elon Musk? The answer will not surprise you. And there's a video of George Galloway that puts the corporate news media exactly where it belongs. This is a moment, folks, I'm telling you, sure as I'm sitting here, this is a moment that you have to watch. If you're ready, this is Direct Impact. For those of you watching us all over the world, it's called Super Tuesday. I know, corny. This is when more states than at any other time all vote to decide who will be their party's pick to run for president. As expected, the Democrats, who are controlled more than anything else by the will of their party apparatchiks than the will of the voters, let's face it, have chosen President Biden to remain as their nominee. And also, as expected, Republicans, who generally are afraid to take on the Trump mystique, are choosing the former president as their nominee. There's one bit of news from all of this, though. One bit of news that comes out of Super Tuesday, by golly, and it's this.
But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in.
There you go. She's out. Alas, Mr. Trump, for his part, is reportedly looking for money, big money. He obviously needs donors to shore up his campaign. And he also has some legal bills and now some fines that stand at about $500 million. There's a lot being made of this meeting that apparently has taken place between the former president and Elon Musk, who is said to be worth some $200 billion. The two men, seen there in a previous meeting, apparently met so that Mr. Trump could ask him for some financial assistance with his campaign. While we don't know the answer to that question, we do know that Elon Musk has now taken to the thing he owns, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and he has put out the following. Quote, just to be clear, I am not donating money to either candidate for U.S. president. Pomp and ceremony. Let's talk China. How about it? The nation that will likely be the world's leading economy, surpassing the U.S. by the end of the decade, is admitting to undergoing some financial difficulties at the present moment. However, it is still setting a goal to grow their economy this year by 5%. That's their number. That's their target, 5%. Which, by the way, I don't know if you've thought about this. I have. That's a percentage that most countries in the world, including ours, would die for. But the big news out of this meeting from the Chinese parliament is a declaration that when it comes to Taiwan, this is important, when it comes to Taiwan, it's no more Mr. Nice Guy speaking at the Great Hall of the People in Tiananmen Square. Premier Li Shuang said China will again increase its defense spending and apparently is no longer, it says, apparently no longer talking about a peaceful reunification with its wayward province.
Also Monday, Li flagged another rise in defense spending and toughened rhetoric toward Taiwan. His report to Parliament dropped all mention of peaceful reunification with the island, which Beijing views as a breakaway province. Instead, it promised to resolutely oppose any move towards Taiwan independence.
So we have to ask ourselves as we listen to that, is China using this opportunity, this pomp and circumstance, to send the West a warning, one that is in response to the military exercises that the United States and others have been undertaking off of their coast? You see, that is what George Galloway would say that they are doing. But you know what might be an even better question right now? I know you're wondering, why is he talking about George Galloway? Because this is the question that they're asking right now in the British Isles. And the question is these days, what is George Galloway doing? Yeah. The former British MP and frequent guest here on this show for many years appears to be turning the country's political establishment upside down. Galloway is, as I see it, a truth teller. And his truths appear to be making both politicians and reporters uncomfortable over there. Voters in a place called Rochdale have voted to send Galloway back to Parliament as a member of the pro-workers party. He beat the institutional regulars by openly criticizing, among other things, the country's support for Israel's continual bombing of Gaza.
Will members wishing to take their seats please come to the table?
I swear by Almighty God that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Charles, his heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
Wow. So there he is. That's George Galloway without the fedora, being sworn in as a new MP again. And since that swearing in, and even before, the corporate media in England, I mean, really, the corporate media all over the world has been attacking this guy. But true to form, the Scottish hellraiser has been firing back. In fact, there may be no better example of this exchange, which is going absolutely viral. This Sky TV interviewer, this is what I was telling you about that I wanted you to see. The Sky TV interviewer, who seems to be a defender of the prime minister, peppers Galloway with prepared questions. And Galloway just bats them right back. This is really something. Pay attention. Here it is.
The Prime Minister is saying
that you are...
We're
talking as if this is God. We're talking about little Rishi Sunak in the fag end of his prime ministership. Don't talk to me as if he's come down from the mount with tablets of stone. The things that he says are somehow meant to awe me. They may awe you. They don't awe me.
A lot of people have just watched what the Prime Minister said. This is your opportunity to respond to what he said. Well, he says that there are forces here at home trying to tear us apart. He is implying you are a divisive figure. Well, you have run an election campaign that has tried to appeal particularly, one section of the community.
Who won the election? Me or Rishi Sunak? I've got the Democratic mandate here, not Rishi Sunak. He didn't even come second. He was lucky to come third. So don't put to me statements made by Rishi Sunak as if I'm supposed to be impressed by them. He don't impress me much.
We at Sky have spent some time today on the streets of Rochdale, and there are people who say that they feel intimidated by people like you and the people that have supported you.
They have pointed out
that you have concentrated your campaign on foreign affairs, and they worry that Rochdale will not be the winner.
That's my answer to you. I was just elected with a thumping majority by the electorate in Rochdale. That's all that matters to me.
So why are there people in the streets of Rochdale today worried?
Well, people voted yesterday, and they voted for me. Why is that difficult for you to grasp?
Why are there people on the streets worried?
There may be people who didn't vote for me who are worried, but the majority, the thumping majority, voted for me. I've got the mandate, and I'm going to the House of Commons with it.
And it's a mandate, you think, to do what? Because there are people that listen to what you say, what you say about whether or not Israel has a right to exist, what you say about what many Jewish people think are threatening slogans.
We had this conversation last night. Why are you reheating it?
because in the light of the Prime Minister's statement...
Don't keep
statement,
telling me about the Prime Minister as if he was Moses.
Do you not respect the Prime Minister?
Do I respect the Prime Minister? I despise the Prime Minister. And guess what? Guess what? Millions and millions and millions of people in this country despise the Prime Minister. I don't respect the Prime Minister at all.
At all. What a moment. There's so much to take away from that conversation, and I think it befits a global perspective, not just a British perspective. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our panel to discuss Mr. Galloway's stunning victory. There is Steve Gill, CEO of Gill Media, along with the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute, Daniel McAdams. We will be right back.
Is it possible to get lost in time? Well, come to Kamchatka and see for yourself. Here, several unique ethnic groups are remaining in their own bubble of sorts, surrounded by these beautiful landscapes. We've come to see how the natives of Russia's far, far east live and preserve their ancient traditions and culture. And if we've come this far, we know that it's going to be worth the journey.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. And we are joined now by Steve Gill, CEO of Gill Media and executive director of the Ron Paul Institute. There he is, one of my favorite guests, Daniel McAdams. Steve, I got to start with you because you're kind of a raw politician kind of guy. And I just watched that exchange with Galloway, and I thought that was one of the best takedowns I've seen in a long time on the part of a politician for a corporate media type. You say what?
I'm just sorry that Super Tuesday has already passed, so I can't write him in. That's the kind of straight talk that we get from a Donald Trump, and he is going to be beloved, not despised, in England by a significant share of the population. Now, some of them will despise him, too.
But he doesn't necessarily, you know, Donald Trump is a guy who plays to one side, okay? Let's face it. Like him or hate him, he plays to one side. He knows where his bread is buttered. This guy doesn't. This guy's just as much a lefty as he is a righty in many ways. And I think that's fascinating. By the way, the consortium of votes that he got was just that. It was people on the left and people on the right came together to put him into office.
Well, and most of us are not in a block of what we believe. You know, we have things that are considered progressive. We have things that are considered conservative. And there's a lot that are in the middle that are trying to balance, you know, I feel this way, but I think this way, balancing emotion and facts.
Let me bring Dan in. Dan, when I watch Galloway, I think of Ron Paul. I think that, and maybe I'm going a little overboard here, I think Ron Paul is a manifestation, pardon me, Galloway, or actually both ways it can work, but let's go with Galloway. I think Galloway is in many ways a manifestation of what the Ron Paul Institute stands for, a bit of libertarianism with a sense of common sense and an effort to put the brakes on nations like the British Isles and the United States' effort to continually want to run the world. My view, what's yours?
Well, Rick, as you know, the mainstream media has tried to put Americans, and the rest of the world especially, but Americans in boxes. You are either a lefty and you watch Rachel, or you're a righty and you watch Fox, and that is your religion. It's almost a substitute for religion in the United States.
Yeah.
So someone like a Ron Paul or George Galloway comes along And that breaks the mold completely, because most of us are no longer like that. Most of us are just as happy to watch Glenn Greenwald as we are Tucker Carlson, as Judge Napolitano, or as Rick Sanchez. You know, we don't fit into these nice boxes anymore. So that's what Ron Paul grasped in 2008 when he broke out in his candidacy. And that's what George Galloway has embraced for years. I've watched him for years. But at this moment, when we're seeing the horrors going on in the world right now, he has emerged to shine the light on the duopoly, both in the UK and in the US and elsewhere in the world. So it's a real, you know, confluence of amazing forces.
We're going to talk about this in a minute, and I know what they are. It's China, it's Gaza, it's Russia, Ukraine, right? And we're going to get there. But first, let me focus a little bit on what Steve and I were talking about, and that is the sense of anti-establishment that you get from a guy like George Galloway. And he was able to do it by pricking right at the center of force, the centrifuge, if you will, in the British Isles, and that is the Prime Minister. And he essentially said to this reporter, who seemed dumbfounded when he told him, he's the Prime Minister, he's not God. Something about that phraseology that we can say in any one of our democracies that I think aren't so much democracies anymore, I think really hits home. I think that's where he got people to want to make that video viral. Do you agree?
Well, I think one aspect of it was Galloway focusing on, I was elected. We all know Rishi Sunak was not elected to his post at all. And so you have this rhetoric, well, our democracy is threatened by a guy who was democratically elected. And I think that was really the great point he was making in that exchange, among others.
Do you believe, Steve, that when he pushes back and says, because, you know, Sky TV and the BBC are, I think, and I may be wrong and I may get some mail from England on this, they're kind of our version of CNN and Fox and NBC and all these institutional, you know, corporate networks that we have here too. They abide by certain rules. And I think this reporter was saying, I'm here to defend the Prime Minister. And he kind of put him in his place.
Yeah, and they follow the in-the-box thinking. I think what you're seeing from Galloway, I think what you're seeing with the election of Milieu, I think what you saw with Bolsonaro, and you've got some of the European countries that are following that same track. You're seeing this rise of populism, mm-hmm. and it is being embraced, and it is a trend that the bureaucratic deep states are not going to like.
But it can't be here. All right, I'm going to push back on you for that. It can't be populism for the sake of populism.
No, I think they believe
just,
it.
But let me push back a little more on that. You can't just go out and say, I hate Mexicans, therefore vote for me, knowing that 40% of Americans are mad about what's going on in the border. That's populism used in a nefarious way. Populism used in a positive intellectual way, the way I believe Galloway does it, is a good way of using populism. Tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, and I'll toss to the libertarian view we talked earlier. Our founders were small L libertarians. Get off my back, get out of my way, get out of my pocket, leave me alone. That's the kind of populism of saying, you know, do what's right, use some common sense. It is an intellectual but also visceral population.
Back to you, Dan, this little back and forth I just had with Steve. Populism for the sake of populism, as opposed to intellectual populism. See, now, I've always thought when I listen, and I disagree with a lot of what Rand Paul says from time to time, and Ron Paul, but I think they've always come at it from a very smart position and not just trying to say things because they know they'll get a bunch of white guys with beers to go along with them, or for that matter, African Americans or Latinos. What do you think?
Well, I know Ron Paul better. I've worked for him for 24 years now, so I know him much better. And his position has always been, you must first have a set of principles. And that's one thing completely lacking in Washington. My guess is it's lacking in the UK. Certainly know that Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak both support the wars. They both want to go to war with Russia. They both want to support Israel and slaughtering more Gazans. They both want to take on China. So there's this duopoly. And so they don't run on any principles. They run on their affection for power, money and power. And we know very well, Rick, that's what's driving the war in Ukraine. The billions of dollars that are getting skimmed off by the military-industrial complex and all of its denizens in Washington, D.C., where you are.
Is it especially unfair to attack a man and call him an anti-Semite just because he has, as I think Galloway would say, a position on what Israel's foreign policy is, which is negative?
Well, I've seen a clip of Galloway where he was very, very clear. I mean, he's a man of the left. And as you say, Rick, I'm sure there are plenty of things I wouldn't agree with him on if we wanted to get into the weeds. But I've seen him very clearly defend his actions, for example, against apartheid in South Africa, about his Jewish, you know, with the African National Congress was made up of the non-Africans were predominantly Jewish. And he talked about working as an underground worker opposing apartheid in South Africa and how closely he worked with Jews. The idea that if you are against Israel's current policies, that you're somehow anti-Jewish is absurd. And he makes that excellent point that, of course, there's no way, there's no parallel between these.
We've gotten to a point, though, Steve, in this country where it does seem like this apparatus, I know people on the right like to call it the deep state. I stay away from those words because it makes it sound like it's some type of conspiracy. And I don't think it's as much conspiratorial as it is problematic in that this thing inside our country that we have kept feeding because it makes money. Same thing happens in banking and in a lot of other institutions. But defense has become this monster apparatus that we keep feeding. And eventually it wants to eat. So it needs another base in Ukraine. It needs another base in Germany. It needs more soldiers. It needs more money. It needs a war, literally needs a war for it to be able to make money. That's a problem. And I think that is kind of what we were talking about. And that's the kind of thing that Galloway seems to despise every time you listen to him talk. That's important.
We used to hang war profiteers in this country during the Civil War when they were providing boots that would wear out while they're walking. And you're right. We had the Iraq War, and then it moved to the Afghanistan War. Mm-hmm. We got out of there. We had to have another one to sell more bombs and missiles. And look, I'm the son of an Air Force fighter pilot. I have great respect for our military, but not those who are profiteering from it. And when you see this kind of ongoing, even the promises, you had Tim Scott say, no, we're not giving them this stuff. We're loaning the Ukrainians this. Yeah, we're going to get paid back that. Or then they say, well, this $60 billion they're asking for Ukraine now is actually going to go to the big business military industrial complex, the dirty little secret. So we're doing this to pay people here who give us donations.
How do we get a George Galloway in the United States? I know you're going to argue that Trump may be that, but I watched the Trump administration name a new president in Venezuela. Like, who the hell are you to name a president in Venezuela? I saw the Trump administration kiss Bibi Netanyahu's behind in ways that I've never seen anybody kiss anybody's behind in foreign policy. So to say that Trump is a Galloway, I think, is a little bit of a stretch. But then again, let me give you the opportunity to disagree.
Well, Israel's unique. It is a fine line to say I can disagree with their policies as a country and not be branded as an anti-Semite. It's a unique conflict.
But he was in bed with Bibi Netanyahu throughout his administration, and most people would say the Abraham Accord is what led us to where we are today.
But I can disagree with British policy and not be accused of being anti-Church of England.
Correct.
I can disagree with Putin, not be accused of attacking the Russian Orthodox Church, although Zelensky's actually doing that in Ukraine.
Well, and Dan, here's the point. As we look at foreign policy, we can't help but see three general areas where our what is the proper word that I should use to describe this? Our defense mechanism is making sure that those places stay fertile enough for them to be able to draw funding from them. One of them is China, no doubt. The other one is Israel, Gaza, no doubt. The other one, of course, is Ukraine. If they can keep those three things going, not necessarily to win anything, but just to keep them going, it seems to me what they really want is the resources from it. Isn't that the end game?
Well, they're not even trying to hide it anymore, Rick. I mean, we saw Victoria Nuland about a week ago, just before she retired from the State Department, openly saying, look, you guys don't realize 95% of the money we're spending on Ukraine stays right here in D.C., you know, wink, wink. I mean, and I think Tony Blinken said it himself. I mean, they're not trying to hide it anymore. This used to be called money to defend the United States. It's not anymore. They're openly saying, look, we've got a fascist system. We've got corporatism here. We've got to keep Lockheed Martin alive.
Yeah.
And that's just how it goes. And there may be a couple of jobs that trickle down to the, you know, to the peon somewhere. But this is about, I mean, this is late empire stuff, Rick. I mean, this is late empire, funny money stuff that's that's happening, and they're openly admitting it.
Thank God for all his faults, for the George Galloways and the Ron Pauls and the people out there who are willing to say we can't continue in this direction because it's going to lead to our undoing. And we have to be able to ask the right questions. And unfortunately, there are very few in the media who are doing that. I thank you both, gentlemen, for helping us do just that. Steve Gill and Daniel McAdams. Thank you both. This is a great conversation. Before we go, I do want to remind you of something, though. Our mission here, really, it's pretty simple. We want to kind of de-silo the world. We don't want to live in little boxes where I only think what my friends think or hate what the other guys think. No, truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.